You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi everyone, welcome to the show. It's Monday, August the 10th, brand new week, and the heatwave in the UK continuing. And as sunshine-hungry Britons overcrowd every available inch of beachfront, our racecourses remain resolutely empty, with the idea of that pilot day at Goodwood Saturday week ago a distant memory. We're not alone, of course. Ireland are yet to welcome even owners back to the track, while never was there a more curious and odd juxtaposition than the hometown hero of Saratoga's Travers Stakes romping home in front of an empty grandstand. And I'll be talking to the NBC and Fox Sports host Lafitte Pinkeye about the brilliant Tis the Law later and what it was like to be there. Now, Europe's classiest performance at the weekend came at Deauville, with Space Blues, the winner from Glorious Goodwood, establishing himself as a serious Group 1 horse in the Maurice de Geest, and that in front of 5,000 people. And in a moment, I'll tell you how France are ahead of the pack in the company of France Gallo's CEO, Olivier Deloire. But first, I'm joined by Lydia Hislop. Lydia, we've been backwards and forwards, but are there any signs now, particularly with what the government's been saying in the last few days, of forward momentum in this area for us in the UK?
No, I think is probably the honest answer to this, isn't it? You know, the only message that we're getting from government, I think everybody, is schools. They're totally focused on that. And, you know, I know that proposals are going forward from our sport to government, but I'm not sure that they are in a position to be listened to at the moment. And it's starting to get worrying. I'm certainly worried. I wouldn't even be surprised if we took a step back before we took a step forward. We have to bear in mind that compared to other sports, we're in quite a privileged position in having restarted racing without a lab testing model, and we don't have anything like a bubble, which other sports do have. And so at the moment we have we're able to do this, and we're also from 3 weeks a day expanding the fixture list back up to by 20% back up to virtually normal volumes. The one thing we don't want to happen is to sacrifice the sport taking place, and I'd be slightly worried that we might take a step back with owners before we take a step forward on crowd pilot schemes. Don't want to set any hairs running. That's just my worry. I haven't got any sort of any indication of that. I'm just looking at the wider landscape, it just and the way in which the infection rates are going and how government are reacting, that does make me concerned.
And it's only natural that each country looks at its neighbours and tries to work out why they're doing one thing whilst we're doing another, and evidently the answers are complex. I've been speaking to the France Gallo chief executive Olivier Deloire. France have been enjoying spectators at their race meetings since the beginning of July, and I asked him how this had come about.
We are able to welcome some big spectators since July the 11th. That was a new decree released by the government with a limit of 5,000 people on a race day. So it's now nearly a month with spectators on our racetracks, and especially in Deauville, because the meeting started now more than a week ago. And things go pretty well. People are back on racetracks. We got nearly 4,000 people yesterday for the Primoris de Guest, which is a good attendance, marginally down on last year, but pretty good due to the context. And the very positive thing is that people are really respecting the few rules that have been implemented. The main one being to wear the mask during all the day at the races.
Were you concerned about whether that would be observed properly?
Well, yes, we were, and I must say that when we we got this decree and it was clearly stated that the wearing of the mask was mandatory, I was a little bit concerned that it was maybe too much to ask to people when going back to racing, and that we would have to act as policemen, you know, on racetracks to make sure that people follow the rule. And it's positive to see that first people are back, so they do accept this constraint, and probably that the perception of it is not so bad, and probably that people feel safer wearing the masks than not. And then we do not have to be behind everybody to remind them of wearing the mask. If you walk around the racetrack, you will see families and racing fans wearing it quite properly. So we don't have that much of a dirty job to do during the races, which is good. Well, felt very sad for all the people working hard at Goodwood to make this happen, and it's obviously a big upset to be informed so lately of a change of direction. And I can really understand what it means to them, because we are in the process of organizing and preparing the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe the first Sunday of October. And I must say that it's never been so hot than this year because of the lack of visibility that we have. Today we can welcome up to 5,000 people, including all the professionals and staff and people working on site. So that is one option for the ARC, which would basically mean that only probably the runners' connections, plus owners and breeders, the media and the staff would be allowed to participate into this big race day. But we are working hard to convince Paris local authorities that we can organize an event which would be respectful of the barrier gestures with a crowd up to 20,000 people. So, but as long as we do not have any positive response from the authorities on that one, it's pretty hard to make decisions in terms of organization. Yeah. Because of course, the setup is not the same for 5,000 people or 20,000 people. And now it's coming sooner.
Yeah, so let's just clarify that, as you've mentioned the ARC, and that's obviously your biggest race day of the year by far. You want 20,000 people there, but you've got to get on the front foot and lobby the local authority and lobby government to make that happen. I mean, is that something that we really need to understand, the fact that you can't just stand still and allow a situation to drift? You have to be making your case the whole time, almost on a daily basis.
That's exactly it, and that's the way it happened. You know, when we could resume racing on as of May the 11th, that was really because we made a case for it, and we fought quite hard to make this happen. And I think it will be the same to organize an event like the ARC. If we just sit and wait for local authorities to tell us, okay, guys, you can welcome up to 15 or 20,000 people, it will never happen, of course. So we will try to use the fact that we feel that the government wishes some big events like Roland Garros that will happen at the end of September to not to be organized behind closed doors and to be organized like proper events, even if they will be, of course, different from the years, the past years. And show them that we can do things in a way that we can really control the flow of people and limit, reduce the risk of spreading the virus.
Just as I was coming down here to interview you this morning, I heard an item on the radio suggesting that, as in the UK, there have been suggestions of a spike on the outskirts of Paris. How big a concern is that, and how will that likely threaten sporting events in the coming months, do you think?
It's very hard to say. Of course, I think we are all pretty much concerned by the fact that the number of new cases daily is on the rise, even though it seems to be more young people than it was in March and April. So it's not as frightening as it could be a few months ago. Still, the trend is not really positive. And of course, our concern is that it could make the local authorities in big cities like Paris and the government make some adjustments in the way the situation is managed today, and especially as regards the bigger events and fairly massive crowds.
But of course, where you do have an advantage is presumably you're being asked to track and trace your crowd, and therefore if there's no indication of any virus being spread on a race course because people are observing proper mask wearing and social distancing protocols, then that surely puts you in a reasonably advantageous position.
Well, you're right. And this is why I think the way it goes today is probably a good asset for us in this perspective. Now, that's one thing to organize racing with 3,000-4,000 people. And that's another thing to convince local authorities that we can make the same sort of things with 20,000 people. It's quite a big gap.
Well, I wish you well, Olivier. I can't let you go without asking about yesterday's big day at Deauville, the Prix Maurice de Geest, and a sparkling performance from Space Blues. The whole Deauville holiday vibe, how is that working?
Well, pretty well. We had good racing, as you say, yesterday. Space Blues was really impressive. And really made a terrific finish, as evidence the sectionals provided by the tracking system. That was really interesting to see how fast it could go in the last two furlongs. We have hopefully a very exciting Prix Jacques Lemarois next Sunday. They are still really top class milers in the race, so we hope they will. All come to Deauville next week, but it could be a fantastic race. And then will come the Prix Morny. So there's plenty to come here in Deauville. And I just hope that the French runners can be competitive against the best English and Irish horses making the trip to try and grab some new group ones.
Olivier, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Bye-bye.
Well, Lydia, I think quite a bit to take there from Olivier. First of all, a bit of a bombshell dropped in the middle there that the French racing authorities were looking at 20,000 people for Arc Day and were lobbying their government accordingly. That's going to be a challenge.
It is, particularly if the British and Irish can't come over.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
No, seriously. You know, that was a bit of a bombshell, wasn't it? And it is a very stark contrast. If you look in the other direction, though, and look at Ireland, well, they're in a position at the moment where even owners can't attend the race course. So, you know, when we were coming out of lockdown, these three countries are in different positions, clearly. And certainly France Gallo would appear to benefit from being very close to the seat of power in a way that British racing is not close to Boris Johnson. And the conduit through the DCMS, the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, isn't one of the stronger or more well-funded government departments.
Of course, there are figures in British racing who will tell you our relationship with senior members of government is extremely strong because they happen to have personal relationships with them. But that doesn't seem so far to have parlayed into what British racing has always wanted to happen when it wants to happen, because it has to still go through the procedures of the Department for Culture, Media and Sport.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't doubt there are close relationships, personal relationships, but that doesn't, we still have to go through the proper routes at this point. We're in the same lobbying position as football, and I suppose the Premier League will be coming back next month and they're going to be wanting some form of hospitality there. The lower leagues are going to need need some gate receipts. So, you know, our it helped us before to be in the same lobbying group as football and other sports. And so maybe that might help as well. But it worries me that, I think Conor McGinn said to you this time last week, that if you can't run a pilot in the middle of nowhere in Sussex, with all, you know, due respect to Petworth and Chichester, et cetera, you know what I mean? Not next to a massive conglomeration, then, you know, where are you going to run that pilot? And if there's so much concentration on schools, and understandably so, then that puts pressure on the pilot happening at all this month. And then that has got to put pressure on that October crowds deadline. It just seems to me, it's starting to get more and more worrying.
And there has to be surely a point where sports authorities think we are simply going to be seen as too insensitive if we keep pushing.
Exactly. That's the thing. You know, you can't be tin-eared about it, can you? You can't, you know, pretend that everything around you isn't happening in the world. I mean, we are part of society. That was one of the tensions at the start, wasn't it? During lockdown, you know, the suggestion was that we could just, you know, go ahead by ourselves somehow. Well, you know, that would be illegal. Well, it probably wouldn't be illegal, would it? I mean, that's one of the problems with all of this. But at the moment, we've got, in some ways, we've got the worst of both worlds, because, you know, owners are allowed on the race course, but they're deeply unhappy about it. They can't go, you know, syndicate owners can't go in numbers that make, you know, which is the point of being part of a syndicate. And when they get there, you know, they're getting a variety, they're facing restrictions. You know, some courses are working really hard to try and help them as much as possible. But, you know, they're not happy with what they're getting. But as I say, I just feel that the whole thing is very, very precarious. And we're down the list.
Just going back to France, you see everybody there, and Olivier was pointing out everyone happy to wear a mask. And it's blanket. Everyone has to wear a mask from the minute they walk into the race course to the minute they leave. And surely it's to their advantage that they've just had very strict protocols, blanket protocols, applied and adhered to, crucially.
Yes, I think so. You know, you were mentioning the spike on the outskirts of Paris that were being reported this morning. They're also reporting potentially requiring people to wear face masks outdoors in Paris. Over here in Britain, we have, some of us seem to have turned it into a sort of an issue of liberty rather than an issue of common sense and politeness. And certainly the race courses are a microcosm of that. We've had Gary Moore infringing Goodwood's restrictions on where trainers as opposed to owners can go, and mixing with his owners. We know that at least one of the trainers was warned at that meeting. We've seen people going through areas that you're way the parade ring where you're meant to wear a mask and not doing so. And some of that will be by genuine mistake, because, you know, things are happening on the race course. You need to do your job, and in the moment when you're trying to do your job, you forget to do that. Whereas if there was a blanket policy, everybody wears a mask, I think it might be more straightforward, and it would certainly, you know, optics, I hate that word, but still, are important, aren't they? And I do think that probably did help France. In Britain, we're not, this hasn't, nothing has been clear. Nothing has been clear cut in Britain. And I think we're probably reaping the whirlwind of that.
What was clear cut over the weekend was that Space Blues is now a very good horse, if we didn't know it already. I was going to ask you, is Pinatubo even in the top three Charlie Appleby trained horses?
So you're thinking about Space Blues and Gayath. Who else? Who's your third?
Master of the Seas, the horse who won the Superlative Stakes, the two-year-old.
You were very taken with that performance, aren't you?
I was. There was a Racing Post jury this morning, and not one person mentioned him as the best two-year-old seen so far this season. I mean, the recency bias has been taken to a whole new level.
Well, he's a two-year-old, so he hasn't fully registered on my consciousness just yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing him. I thought Space Blues was superb. That the way in which he was traveling, the way in which he cut the leaders down, I think it had been already pretty clear even before going into the Lennox that he seemed to be an improved performer this season, and he's carrying on that trajectory. And sizing up a match between him and Pinatubo would be fantastic, wouldn't it, in the foray?
It would, and the very idea that it's been mooted by the train, even if it doesn't happen,
the idea that he said, I'd love to run them both against each other. Yeah, that's what the sport's all about. And if only more trainers would run their very best horses against each other when the opportunities present themselves, then we'd all be better off, I think.
Hear, hear. We absolutely would. You know, we've seen that come to in sharp focus in recent months, but also, I suppose, for a while now, particularly given that over here, for example, John Gosden has so many jewels in his stable and has managed many of their careers in order that they don't cross each other.
Yeah, we'd love to see the match-up between Space Blues and Pinatobo. If we do see it, it'll probably be in the Prix de la Forêt on Arc Day, maybe in front of 20,000 people. Who knows? The most extraordinary juxtaposition, if you like, of top-class racing and no crowd, I think, came at Saratoga over the weekend. You would expect Travers Day to be absolutely heaving.
Have you been to that?
Yeah, I have a couple of times, and it's just insane. There's a queue a mile long outside the gates and people like sprinting for their picnic tables at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's utterly nuts.
Sounds great.
And the idea that you had this brilliant winner of the race, hometown hero horse with nobody there is just so odd. I've been talking to Lafitte Pinkeye III, who's a friend and colleague of mine from the States, and he was hosting the Fox broadcast on Saturday of the Travers, and he witnessed Tisdelore and Gamine's brilliant victory in the Test Stakes. And I began by asking him just exactly how the whole experience felt.
Bizarre, Nick. Having been here the last few weeks, you grow accustomed to not seeing fans in a racetrack that is typically crawling with them. Opening day was jarring. Going to the fronts, there's some activity in the paddock, so that feels closer to normal. Every time we're on the front side, it's like a bucket of cold water reminding you that we're in the situation we're in. But Travers Day is specifically where you have 45, 50,000 people and the place is just rocking. For the racing to be that good and the building to be that empty, it was surreal.
How good is Tisdelore?
Just, he's stupid good. He's ridiculously good. Every race he runs in, the race is over at the top of the stretch. Like, this was the first race every one of these horses had ever run at a mile and a quarter, which is a conversation that we hammer home until we're dizzy for the Kentucky Derby, but no Derby yet. So this was the first opportunity. And, you know, will he be as effective at a mile and a quarter? And how will he like a quarter of a mile out, the race was over. He wasn't Arrowgate fast, but it was equally as dominant as Arrowgate was. Did you see Manny Franco at the 16th? He was celebrating. It wasn't like a fist. He's waving the whip at the 16th pole. He took a look in his rearview mirror. You know, the competition's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. A wave of the whip, and it's time to pose for a picture as you're crossing the wire. It couldn't have been easier. It was just a mesmerizing performance, and going back to the idea that nobody was there. This is Saratoga. We're in upstate New York. Frenzied, loyal racing fans, and this is a New York bred. My lasting impression will be the horse and his performance. There will also be a what would that have been like? What would it have felt like in front of that New York crowd watching Tisdelore do that in the Travers?
How important do you think he is now for the sport?
So here's what you have to remember is that there are people watching horse racing now on a regular basis that have never taken any interest. People love sports. People love competition. People love to gamble. And horse racing on massive platforms through NBC and Fox, hours and hours that we have a lot of eyeballs on the sport. And let's say that Tisdelore, first of all, there's going to be a lot of coverage leading up to the Derby. Should he win the Derby, horse racing is never more highlighted. It's never more in terms of, you know, in the A block of a sports center broadcast and constantly being discussed than there is when a 3-year-old that has won the Derby wins the Preakness in that 21-day lead up to the Belmont Stakes. Without much else going on, and I don't know what the world and the sports world will look like then, should he win the Kentucky Derby, Tisdelore is going to be about as big, one of the biggest names in sports for about a month leading up to the Preakness Stakes in this crazy, unorthodox Triple Crown, which, quite frankly, what's being asked of Tisdelore is probably more difficult as what's asked of what was asked of American Pharoah or Justify. For the sport in general, this horse is going to become a household name very quickly, if not already.
The velvety tones of Lafitte Pink Eye III. Lydia Hislop is still with me. I just hesitate to ask, can I hear seagulls?
You can. I am recording this from my roof terrace in North London, and we have a very large population of gulls these days here.
I love the fact you're recording this on your roof terrace.
I've kind of made it sound more grand than it is. I'm a keen gardener, you know. It's very good life here.
Tom and Barbara. I won't ask if Margot and Jerry are downstairs.
Sadly not.
So your life is much less interesting because of that. Right.
Yeah. Onwards.
Just find us a tip.
Right, my intended horse is an non-runner today, so I'm going tomorrow to Wolverhampton, place of my birth, 3:40 Union. I think he wants a mile and a half at least.
Yeah, he's a stayer, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh. Probably improve for the 7th trip eventually when it gets to 14 furlongs.
Obviously. Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure if you do enjoy the programme to tell your friends first and then to rate, review and subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, or Google. And we'll see you all again tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.